evaluation, which is evaluation.
Mm-hmm. We're ready to go. Weekend Edition is sponsored in part by a grant from Hoffer Glass. And funds for the production of Sunday at Noon are provided by the KUAC Public Affairs Programming Fund. Contributors include Westmark Fairbanks. Good afternoon. This is Sunday at Noon. I'm Susan McInnes, and the rustling you hear in the background is perfectly permissible. Is live radio coming to you on Sunday at Noon. When the delegates to Alaska's State Constitutional Convention considered the question of local governments, they were justifiably concerned with the question of size. After all, Alaska's territory took in 586,400 miles, no small pie for the cutting. Local governments outside often seem to be a jumble of jurisdictions competing for power and revenues, and the idea of replicating those forms in the last frontier didn't appeal at all. The Local Governments Committee to the Constitutional Convention came up with the idea of boroughs, large ones, and a strong determination to avoid the duplication of service and powers they found outside. Delegates approved the innovation, voters approved the Constitution, and in 1963, legislators passed the Mandatory Borough Act. It directed the 8 populated areas of the state to organize or be organized. In the Tanana Valley, an independent wedge of a most independent frontier, the news did not bring a standing ovation. According to some, in fact, a howl went up, bouncing off the Alaska Range and reverberating throughout the valley. Well, good afternoon. This is Sunday at Noon. I'm your host, Susan McInnes. This year, 1989, marks the 25th anniversary of the Fairbanks North Star Borough, a local government that came in like a lion and has not, if I may be forgiven, in its quarter century, ever been thought of as a lamb. I'm very pleased to welcome 4 people who've made community service a large part of their lives, who were involved in the early days of the borough's formation, and who bring their insights and opinions to this edition of Sunday at Noon. Now, I'm going to ask your forgiveness and apologize to you as we start out, because I'm not going to be able to list all the things you've been involved in. This is going to be very cursory. I would like people in the listening audience to get just a glimpse of my guests today. First, a very deep welcome to June Carlson. June Carlson is the chair of the 25th Anniversary Committee for this North Star Borough. She is also the wife of the late John Carlson, 14 years the borough mayor. Welcome also to Kathleen Mike Dalton, member of the first borough assembly and on that assembly for 5 years. She has been a newspaper reporter, an Alaskan traveler and writer, currently a Newsminer columnist, and her column appears in Heartland. It is called Along the Trail. Welcome, please, to Harold Gillum, the second borough chairman, also member of the Fairbanks City Council from 63 to 66, and Fairbanks City Mayor from 1972 to 1978. And welcome, please, Janet Baird, member of the Fairbanks Independent School District School Board, that was in 1963, member and president at one time of the Fairbanks North Star Borough School Board, she served on the board for 5 years, and longtime executive director for the Tanana Valley Fair Association. Thank you all for coming out in the chill and for joining us on this day. I hope that we can have in the next hour just a conversation, if you will, between 5, and if we open the lines to calls between however many join us, about the 25th anniversary of the borough, about the borough itself, how it started, why, what got in its way, some of the difficulties and controversies along the way, and wind up with maybe a look at where we might be going in the next 25 years. So maybe we can think about that as we go along. Let's open this hour, please, with a look at why the interior didn't welcome local government with open arms. Would anyone like to start? Mike Dalton, people are looking at you. Why didn't the people of Fairbanks...
I think Harold Gillum would be a good one on that one, but Harold can pick up where I leave off.
Good.
Your question is, why did people not want a borough? The borough was formed officially January 1, 1964. We had been a state for 5 years. We went from territorial status to statehood status, and when that happened, there was no U.S., well, there was still U.S. Fish and Wildlife, but a new department, Fish and Game, was created. There was the judicial system that had to be created. There was health and social services that had to be created. There were the very many departments of state government. Legislature was, I think, rather overwhelmed with responsibilities in those early days, and priorities demanded attention, one of which was the judicial system. I remember the lawyers in this town were a little bit agitated because there was no court to practice in, and their bank accounts were going lower, and they made lots of noises, and they got very involved in. I remember the defeat of Judge Harry Aaron, which to me is still a sad, sad episode in our history. He was a judge who had been appointed and came up at an inopportune time. I think his defeat was based a lot on agitation and disappointment in the speed with which a judicial system was being implemented.
Mike, was he a territorial judge or first state judge?
No, he was a Supreme Court justice appointed by our governor.
Yeah, that was one of the miscarriages of justice. The Bar Association was didn't like the Chief Justice, Buell Nesbitt, but he wasn't up for election, so they thought they would take on Harry Aaron, who was up for election that year.
One of the finest men I ever knew.
Very much so.
And he did nothing to defend himself. And that I still have visions of two attorneys and on television here, and another one whom I did not see on television, who fought very hard against him. At any rate, he died shortly after that, and that was one of the sad things in my memory of it. But there were so many things in state government that had to be implemented. By the time they got around to the borough, Section 10 of our Constitution said there shall be boroughs, and by the time they got around to implementing that, a lot of folks, this is my own personal opinion, so please add to it and subtract to it, you other three, please, used some of their anger, frustrations, disappointments with the statehood implementation, various departments, and that was a whipping boy, I think. The borough was a whipping boy for a lot of folks. Huh. A lot of other people just did not want more local government, and they came up here. Still, people come with the same ideas these days. They want to go out and get their chunk of land, build a trail in, pull the spruce trees in around them, and to heck with everybody. But then suddenly they'll show up at Golden Valley and want lights, and suddenly some of them will show up at the borough assembly and want a road built in, and so we still have the same thing. But we had a great many people who came to Alaska for that reason, to get away from civilization and get away from government.
And that was a prevalent, strong mood at that time.
So those are two reasons. You know, the disappointment and the slowness of statehood implementation was, the borough was used as a target for anger and frustration. And then the folks who just plain don't like local government or added government.
Harold Gillum, add to that?
Well, I think that the reason that people didn't like the borough government was, the main fact was that the legislature forced it down our throats. I think that given another couple years, that the borough would have been implemented within the local area, but it would have been done so at the will of the people, so to speak. But the legislature, in its wisdom, saw fit to push it down our throats. One of the driving features of that was that the state was broke at that point, and the state wanted to get rid of the responsibility of education to the greatest extent possible. I think. I mean, that's my belief. I still remember our three legislators. You know, you remember bad things, and some people stick out in your mind. And three people who stick out in my mind on that were the three legislators from the Fairbanks area. The three B's, Bog and Baker and Binkley. And I've still never forgiven them.
For the Mandatory Statehood Act? For Borough Act?
Yeah.
Janet, but they were only three who voted.
They were only three, that's true.
But
they were our
three
B's.
Janet Barrett, an opening thought on why the borough was not welcomed.
Well, I think maybe bringing it down more into the practical decisions that people were faced with making. I served on a group called the Borough Study Group, and we spent a lot of time studying the issue, and then we'd go and talk to people and that kind of thing, meetings and so forth. And there were a lot of strange concepts here. First of all, we were it was a different word. People could have related to counties because every place that people came from, they had counties. Most people didn't come from a place that had boroughs, so you had a definition issue mm-hmm. to start with. And then it wasn't like a county, just with a different name. It had area-wide concepts, and that was a whole different horse of a different color to most people. And there weren't many places in the United States at that time that had this concept of area-wide comprehensive government, so you didn't have a lot of places to go to for examples. And then everything was really fluid. The people had to decide the boundaries. You know, was it going to be a mile around Fairbanks or 1,000 miles around Fairbanks? Mm-hmm. There were very few landmarks or definitions to go by. And you could have some powers or not powers, or you could be first class or second class. And there was just the whole list of things that had to be decided and digested was pretty heavy.
That's one of the reasons the Voluntary Act didn't pass, right? Because there was a voluntary proposition first and then the mandatory one.
Right. Yeah. And one of the questions that we heard the most as we would go to speak to meetings and groups and stuff was, well, why should I pay taxes when I'm not going to get any services? So, and there was, as both Mike and Harold have indicated, a real ingrained resentment of government as well.
June Carlson, any thoughts? We've kind of run the gamut on that one.
Well, these people have covered it pretty well because they were real active at that time. I came into the picture a little later, so although I followed it quite closely. And I think probably, I'm not sure just when planning and zoning came, but I know that was a very hot issue because people didn't want to be told how they should use their property if they had. And of course, to the people that had any value in their home, that was protection, that you had some protection as to what would be built across the street from you and that. So that was a controversial part of the borough, too.
Mm-hmm. Now, there were study groups to establish the borough, and Mike Talton, you were involved in that as well.
There
as
were
Janet,
two.
Is that right?
There was one that formed voluntarily. It was called the Fairbanks Area Action Committee,
of which you were a member.
I was a member and was secretary for a while, quite a while. There was then later another study group headed up by Frank Chapados. That was in 1962, I believe. I'd have to go back in my notes and look at that. But that was a follow-up of the Fairbanks Area Action Committee. But by that time, the legislature had taken some action and said a borough is going to be formed, and you people in the area should form a study group. So then the prior one, though, was a self-motivating group. Mm-hmm. So actually there were two study groups.
And did the study groups, I don't want to outguess, but these are things I'm interested in. Were you concerned with how planning and zoning would be implemented and how taxes would be done and what else? Animal control falls into that purview.
No, not at
and
that
education.
Time, but, the group that Frank Chapados headed up studied the standards that the legislature wanted to address. They even said, look at these various standards like transportation, the economy of the area, it should be a cohesive area, the dependent on the with the economy maybe as part of that glue, education, the people you would serve, the rational area. That group recommended a borough of 2,500 square miles.
Hmm.
And
it's now, it's what, 7,300?
More than that, I think. Yeah. I don't know the exact square miles right now, but it's over 7,000.
Got the picture in the paper, June.
The Heartland last Sunday said 7,361 square miles.
Mm-hmm. Right. But before it was reduced to 7,300
yeah.
square miles, this study group had not acted quickly enough in the legislature's view, so they declared your whole election district shall be a borough, and then
now let people know how big that is, because that's something to consider.
Reverberated off of Mount McKinley, not just the Alaska Range, but Clear McKinley. That took in Tok, Northway, Delta, Salcha, and the entire area. That precipitated a little activity.
Ungainly might be a word there. In the year preceding, the year that the borough took effect, and in the following years, so 63 and 64, there were three or four local elections.
Well, there were three elections in the fall of 1963. Just, you know, most people didn't hardly get your car shut off before it was time to go to the polling places.
Have
and
you
vote
voted?
Again.
Yes. Which time? I'm still voting. What were you voting on?
The voluntary borough formation, the one that Mike is talking about, I believe that election was in September of 1963. And, of course, the borough issue was defeated at that election. But nevertheless, people had filed for seats on the school board and the borough assembly and all the elected offices, as well as the voting on the proposition of whether there should be a borough or not. And when that proposition was defeated, well, then everything else about the election was null and void. And then the regular municipal elections came in October, and because that was the game that was in existence, of course, why people filed for the empty seats and for election for whatever was going on in the municipality at that time. And then the election on the mandatory borough, that wasn't a question of whether you'd have a borough or not, but who would serve on the borough. And I believe that election was in December of 63.
And you ran that year, for first for the independent school board, and then when the mandatory borough came in for the Fairbanks North Star borough.
Oh, I ran all three elections. Oh. I mean, I wasn't going to be left out.
Keep running, Janet. And Mike Dalton, you ran for the first borough assembly.
Right.
That year.
Mm-hmm.
What were some of the things that had to be decided right off the bat? You've run for election, the election has happened, and now we have a borough, and not only do we have a borough, but we have a school board and an assembly.
One of the things that we had to deal with was the size of the borough. It was intolerable to us and to the people in Delta and Togue.
There was a representative from Delta?
Yes, from Delta. George Norton was elected from that region, and we had to deal with that, and that had to go back to the Boundary Commission, and we made recommendations on size, and we had at that time shown them our recommendation, which was 2,500 square miles, and they said, that's not big enough, and let's go back. At any rate, that had to be reduced, and it eventually was reduced. But implementing the borough school district and taking over, see, when the borough formed, there were four taxing entities. There was the Hamilton Acres Public Utilities District, there was the City of Fairbanks, there was the City of North Pole, and the 288 square mile school district. And just before that, the school district and the city had agreed to combine assessors, but they still were doing their own, the assessor who physically went out and looked at the buildings, but they were still doing their own taxation and collection.
So conceivably,
so the borough combined those four entities into one office, which was the borough tax assessment and collection agency, and the borough did it for all four of those, brought them all those under one umbrella.
I expect just that change, for good or for ill, shook people up a little bit. I mean, if I lived in Hamilton Acres, conceivably I was the most taxed, because I was taxed by the City of Fairbanks, Hamilton Acres Service District, and the Independent School District, mm-hmm. right? North Pole, I'd probably be doing best. Only
no,
had
you
two taxing
you didn't
areas.
Have, you didn't have the taxation of the city, at that point.
In Hamilton Acres. No. Oh, because it was outside.
Yeah, that was why it was a service district.
Yeah, it was outside the city limits. And it was a service district for fire protection.
I think so.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But suddenly, there's one group that's going to tax me.
That's right.
Did that distress, or were people thinking that would be more streamlined, more efficient?
I think, I don't know.
I don't think there was any real thoughts on those subjects.
I think people could understand the rationale on that. Have one assessor, one tax collector, and eliminate four offices, and have one. And I don't think there was very much objection to that. I have no recollection of bloody battles over that one. I have plenty of other bloody battle recollections, but not of that.
The voice you just heard is that of Mike Dalton. She is here with June Carlson, with Harold Gillum, and Janet Baird, all to discuss the 25th anniversary of the Fairbanks North Star Borough. Well, what about the formerly independent school board? You weren't so independent anymore, Janet.
No, and there was quite a change, a change in masters, for one thing, and a change in scope, and a change perhaps in attitude with the school district, because that really had gone through a metamorphosis. As the independent school district, the budget was approved by the city council, so it wasn't completely independent. However, the mill rate and the tax assessment was totally under the control of the school district, so that was a fairly independent operation there, and the school district felt reasonably assured that they had authority to produce the kind of school program that they wanted, and that there was accountability to the people, even if the budget totals were approved by the city council. Well, the change to the borough then changed the size of the area. Not too much difference in the number of students, however, because the schools were all located in Fairbanks, and everybody who had school-age kids were sending them already to the existing schools.
And the people outside the city had paid tuition instead of taxes to, is
no,
that right?
No, the school district boundaries were larger than the city. The school district had its own boundaries, and it was...
The city was rather small then.
Very small.
I don't think Lameda was in the city by that time. But
no, not at that time.
I don't think so. The boundaries were small. Hamilton Acres was not in. Yeah, so it was a very small area.
Yeah, but the independent school district was large enough in its boundaries so that it took in mostly where people lived. If there was anybody beyond that, the kids might be doing correspondence schooling or something like that. The schools on the military bases were part of the state-operated school system at that time, and it was quite a bit later that they came into the borough system. But the whole budget process was different. Mike has said, we didn't have an assessing office within the school district anymore. That moved to the borough. And the budget then ran to the borough assembly for approval. And then there was a difference in the borough setup between the management of buildings. Large major maintenance and the capital construction of school buildings was a power of the borough, not of the school board anymore. So that was a big change. And one of the things that was facing the school board at that time was that we desperately needed a couple of new schools. And the sort of threat or the possible oncoming of the borough in the fall of 1963 had kept the school district from putting a bond issue up for a new junior high school. So there was quite a backup need for new school construction, and it was how to work that through a system which had never been tried before. It was used to just be you'd put a bond issue, on a GO bond issue on the ballot, and that's how you got a school. The people voted for it or they didn't.
And we paid for it.
Yeah, yeah. And now it had to be a coordination between the school board, which would generate the issue and request the bond issue, and the borough assembly, which would then implement it and own the schools. So it was quite a different system.
How'd it work? Mike Dalton?
How did what work?
How did this new system work? I mean, was it... in, say, putting together this junior high school and the other two elementary schools that were going to go up?
It was a change from the former operation of the school district, where they had control of construction of schools. It was a little abrasive at times. It was a while before some of the school board members realized that the final buck stopped at the borough assemblies, the final... I mean, not theoretically, but the final buck stopped there. They were the tax collector, and they spent the money, and they made the decision on the capital improvements in the borough. And so it was rather abrasive at times. There's still some abrasive action between the boroughs and the borough assembly and the city and the school boards, but it was, I think, a rather long, painful transition period.
Yeah, it was difficult. However, in the specific issue of the needed schools in those given years, in spite of the fact that it was hard to interact and get it all together, when we finally did get a bond issue on the ballot, which was 2 years later in 1965, that bond issue was quite well put together, in my opinion, and pretty well supported, and it passed overwhelmingly, and it had good support from the members of the borough assembly and the school district. We did a few things different. Instead of lumping all of the proposed construction together in just one thing, there were three separate bond issues on the ballot, one for a junior high, one for an elementary school at North Pole, and one for a small elementary school at Salcha. and they were separate. I think people felt confident that they could vote on either way they wanted on all three of them. And it was pretty well documented, the need, and also the price, the amount of money that we asked for in the bond issue had been pretty compressed and within a standard. And at that time, we were very anxious to hold the construction cost at $3,000 per pupil, which was 25% less than it had been previously, and probably a whole lot different than it is now, but that was quite a economy measure. And as a result of that, those three bond issues went through just 2 years, a little bit less than 2 years, after the formation of the borough with quite flying colors, and we were off to construction for the facilities we needed.
Do anyone of you, or all of you, have thoughts on how that system of checks and balances between the school board and the assembly works? Does it work well, where the school board has to come in and say, we need this much for books and teachers and new buildings and maintenance, and the assembly sits down and trims it according to what they think they can raise? Does it work? Doesn't it work? Harold Gillum, you've looked at it from a couple of different directions.
Oh, I think it works. I think, you know, checks and balances are proper. As Mike alluded to, there's always quite a bit of dissension at this point in time when the school board comes before the assembly or the city council to justify their budget and ask for money. But I think that check and balance is proper. Like Janet said, that the independent school district still had to, prior to the inauguration of the borough, still had to go before the city council and justify the expenditures that it had. And there was a lot of conflict always during those periods of time. It's not a fault of any of the personalities that are involved, because that's ongoing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just a so-called a fault of the system, I guess, whether or not you say it's a fault. I don't know. I think that we sometimes have a misconception that these public bodies should always get along. Maybe they should. Maybe it's in the public's best interest.
Yeah, I think it's to the credit of the system that there is some conflict from time to time. And I, as a grandmother and then mother of two children who were in University Park School at the time, and had gone on through the system. We wanted quality schools, and we still want quality schools. And my grandson goes to Wood River. They have some wonderful activities for children over there, and facilities and materials that we didn't even dream of in University Park days when my son and daughter were there. As an example, we could have a multi-million dollar school, high school out in the bush someplace that demands a lot of attention and a lot of money and a lot of facilities and materials. They pay zero taxes locally.
In an unincorporated area.
The state picks up on all of these multi-million dollar schools that have been built all over the state that are not in a borough or a city. Well, even if they're in the city, they're still a state, because the borough operates education or the state. But here in Fairbanks, I got some figures from the borough just Friday. The total school budget for this year is $84,922,000. And out of that, we, the taxpayers in this district, are paying $22,800,000. That means we want and we demand good schools, and we're willing to pay it. I think it was the same way before. We were willing to pay for what we could afford. I think that's a credit to the system. The borough assembly, of course, if there wasn't a check and a balance, the local contribution to the schools may have been 40 million. Who knows? Mm-hmm. Because we want more and more. And as parents and as grandparents, we want the best we can get for our children. But there's a limit to what the taxpayers can pay. The borough assembly is that check. They have many other responsibilities that they have to go to the taxpayers for. So,
yeah, I don't think the schools have ever been slighted by the actions of either the city councils, mm-hmm, or the borough assembly, One story I'm reminded of as you're talking there, Mike, was during the flood in 67, quite a disastrous point in our Fairbanks history. We had a lot of disaster relief, and one of the federal people who came up, a man by the name of Fitzgerald, went out, and his responsibility was to replenish the stuff that was damaged in the schools. Excuse me. He was absolutely amazed at the equipment and the facilities that we had.
Way up here in the Arctic.
Yeah. He said, well, I've been around to lots of disaster areas, and this is probably one of the best equipped units that I've ever been around. And I think we've always kept it that way.
Again, most of us on the assembly, you were on the first assembly, right, representing as a city council member. We were parents, and we had the same desires as the members of the school board, but at the same time, we had to balance out a budget and catch. We were the ones who took the heat from the taxpayers on the tax bills at that time.
That's right.
There's an old argument in this state. You brought it up, Harold, when we were talking on the phone earlier, that earlier this week, that the state should be responsible for education. And yet I certainly hear in this room the sense that local commitment to education in terms of the wallet helps to create a better school district. I'll just throw that out there and see what people think.
Well, Susan, as we were talking the other day, our state constitution mandates boroughs, but it also mandates the fact that the responsibility for education rests with the state. And the state has never been prone to implement that particular responsibility. It's one of the reasons I said I think we need a constitutional convention to either get rid of that section or to affirm it. And if we want to affirm it, then we should, by golly, make sure that that is done. Yeah, I have some torn emotions, whether I would like to have the state be the sole czar of education. But I do think, and I always have maintained, that the state has a responsibility to fund a basic level of education throughout the state equally. And if we, as a community, wish to put in the amenities, then that's our responsibility, and that should come out of our taxes. But the basic education, that includes buildings, reading, writing, arithmetic, that should be the responsibility of the state. And they take a lot of that responsibility in setting down right now the standards by which the state schools and the borough schools are operated. So that we should also pay for it as a state.
You're listening to Sunday at Noon. That last was the voice of Harold Gillum, former Fairbanks City Mayor between 1972 and 78, earlier than that, member of the Fairbanks City Council, and the second borough chairman of the Fairbanks North Star Borough. My brain was telling me that as soon as I was speaking, also on the Borough Assembly. We also have with us here Janet Baird, member of the Fairbanks Independent School District School Board, and later member and later president of the Fairbanks North Star Borough School Board, also well known as the longtime executive director of the Tanana Valley Fair Association. Also with us, Kathleen Mike Dalton, member of the First Borough Assembly, newspaper reporter, Alaskan traveler and writer, currently Newsminer columnist in Heartland's Along the Trail column. And also June Carlson, she's chair of the 25th Anniversary Committee. I hope as we get closer to the hour, June, you'll talk about some of the activities through the year. And wife of the late John Carlson, 14-year mayor of the Fairbanks North Star Borough.
Susan, if I could interrupt, I'd like to
Please
say that
so.
There's one thing that Janet Baird should be also remembered for, and that is the fact that I think she is to should be given credit for the establishment within the school district of our aid to disadvantaged children. And I was borough chairman at that particular point in time, and I certainly supported her efforts, but I think we have had a system that is beyond compare.
Thank you, Harold. Jenny?
There were a lot of exciting programs and times in those early days with the school district, and the special education program was one. Another program that was started in those days was the alternative schools. At the beginning, it was just alternative high school. Now it's broader in its scope, but there was a lot of controversy about that. A lot of people who said it's not our responsibility, meaning our community's responsibility, to educate, quote, all, unquote, of the children, just those who were willing to sit quietly and learn. And in spite of that, we did establish the alternative high school, which I think has done a lot of good in the community. There were very large strides made in the establishment of vocational education in the school district in those days. And kind of a humorous note, one of the most controversial issues that we ever dealt with on the school board, and you have to remember now that we're talking about the 1960s, was whether or not girls should be allowed to wear slacks to school in cold weather.
In cold weather.
In cold weather, yes.
Well, I should tell you, in California, they were having the same discussion without cold weather, and it failed. We wore skirts through the 60s, or at least the mid-60s, when they gave me my degree and tossed me out.
There was one thing, Susan, about the question about state funding of school districts, 100% state funding of school districts. Regardless of what it says in the Constitution, I personally hope that never comes about. I would consider it a real disaster for some of the what I consider to be the really basic concepts of the public education system, and that is the local commitment and the fact that you have local direction, locally elected people, your neighbors, people you can call on the phone, go over to their house, know who they are, talk to them at meetings, and affect a community impression on your schools. And money is where power is. And where the power is where people's interest is. And I think it would be a real disaster if the state, if we were to relinquish the very precious, precious part of the public school system, which is local control and local input, just on the cross of having the state pay the whole funds for it.
June Carlson, you're nodding.
Well, that has been something that has been discussed through the years, and I think the community has more or less felt that they'd like to have a certain percent of local funding so they have that local control.
Mm-hmm. The proof of the pudding is the $22 million that we contributed this year toward local contribution to our schools, mm-hmm. in addition to the state's $62
million. But of course, that $62 million does control the budget, and we have to bow to the whims of both the state and the federal government anyway, so.
Leverage is relative,
leverage
then.
Is. Yeah.
Right. You know,
before you were through today, I was wondering if we could draw a comparison between the basic mandatory powers that we started out with in 1964 and the current powers that the borough has, just give a perspective on the growth of the
sure.
The obese monster.
Well, my next question was, and I'll let you take it however you wish, the grins around this table, this should be television, folks. My next question was that the first borough chairman, so quoted in last week's Heartland, and quoted and paraphrased, indicated that he wanted the Fairbanks North Star Borough not to become indebted, not to give a heritage of debt to its children, but to start small, grow slow, stay as healthy and as fiscally sound as possible. I'm sure from talking to you, Harold Gillum, that that is also your opinion, and when you were the second borough chairman.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Move us forward during time. We have a very large borough now. If you want to address that original thought, Mike Dalton, go right ahead.
I thought we might talk about it, so I went by and talked to the borough clerk and got
how's that for leading
some
into
sections from the
take my hand
the borough codes that outline, and this these do not go into detail, but outline some of the powers that the borough now exercises. The mandatory ones that came with the borough in 1964 were education, which we've discussed at length, tax assessment and collection, which we've discussed, mm-hmm. and planning and platting and land use. That falls under planning and zoning. In addition to that, the borough has also taken on a transportation system that was voted in October of 75. We also have animal control that was voted in October of 65. Air pollution, which we all know about this day and age, that was voted in May of 1970. Flood control, That was voted by, that's an area-wide power. Again, voted in 1965. That was 2 years before the big flood.
Mm-hmm. We didn't Good timing, anyway.
We didn't have it completed by the flood. We wished we had.
Well, we hadn't even gotten started.
And then another one that is area-wide that everyone in the borough enjoys is library power. Mm-hmm. Garbage and solid waste disposal. Parks and recreation, and I have some personal comments on that on Alaska Land, but that's part of the Parks and Rec, which it shouldn't be. And another one was housing financing. Don't ask me what we're doing there in housing financing. Nothing, I think. But those are just some of the powers that the borough now has, and each one of those has built its own little office and has expanded, and we're under environmental controls. We have asbestos abatement and mm-hmm. and checking on automobiles and don't burn any garbage or brush piles after November 1 and things like that. So I won't go into that, but it has expanded tremendously since January 1, 1964.
I'm just going to throw out a question and let you each respond if you'd like to. I mean, it's established that at least on the left side of the table here, Mike Dalton, you think that our government in the borough is obese, is too large, has encompassed too much. But isn't this kind of the natural course of a government when we give to the government those things we can't do for ourselves individually, that then it stops and says, well, we better do something about this and we ought to do something about that? And Harold Gillum?
Well, I think it's a normal outgrowth of government. You can't have a council, an assembly, a legislature, a Congress meeting as often as they do and not expect them to pass laws. That's what they're there for, and they have to do their job. That's why I suggest that city council meetings should be once a month and borough assembly meetings once every 2 months. And the state legislature should meet once every 2 years, alternate years, to consider the budget. And Congress should adjourn after about 60 days.
But if you're in the assembly, or if you're the borough chairman, or June Carlson, your husband, the borough mayor later, I'm a citizen. I'm going to come to your office and say, you know, we have a problem here in my neighborhood in downtown Fairbanks. Too much noise, not enough garbage collection, the streetlights aren't working, though that won't quite apply to the borough, but, you know, there's also the voice of the people who's saying...
What you're talking about is the people on the elected bodies are responding to their constituents. Mm-hmm. The same with us in Fairbanks, going to Juneau, and the legislators respond. I have a sore spot, is the new Community Activity Center has been designed as, it looks like a 90% sports arena and 10% community activity center. It's not the borough assembly's fault that we have $15 million structure there. I'm glad we have it. And as chairman of the Pioneers Alaska Land Activity Oversight Committee, we've been taking a real interest in that. We're glad that the city of Fairbanks has that. But we didn't go down and ask for it. I didn't.
I feel like the public,
certainly the public did.
No, the public voted it down 3 times. We still got it.
But there are certain constituents who got to legislature and said, we want a piece of the pie. Anchorage has the Sullivan Arena, the Egan Center, and their community centers going up all over the state. And in response to that, there was a $15 million grant to the city of and it came to the borough. Well, now the borough has another big structure that we're going to have to pay for. It's been named the John Carlson Building, and I have a lot of respect for John Carlson and his memory, and I think it's going to be a wonderful addition to the city of Fairbanks, but we're going to have to pay for it.
Mm-hmm. And we've got to put a lot more money into it before we got a usable facility,
and
too.
Yeah. The people wanted it, and the legislators came home with the $15 million, and we have it.
And we could probably spend hours talking about how the pipeline picked this town and borough up and twisted them 4 or 5 times. I mean, part of that is a whole lot of money out there, and we'd like some of that, or we need some of that, or... It's all part of it.
Yeah. Susan, I have a little different slant on the basic question that you asked about the growth of the borough. And I'm not holding any brief for the efficiency of bureaucracies. That is, as has been indicated, sort of a comes with the territory. However, we live in a society, and I like it that way. And I think as members of a society, we are each responsible for each other in a very broad sense. And that to expect to be a part of that society and to meet needs and to improve lives and to improve opportunities and to correct injustices, you have to expect to be involved and you have to expect to pay for it and you have to expect to give. And I don't see the additional powers as all bad. I would hate for us not to have recreation. I would hate for us not to have the library. I would hate for us not to have the ambulance service. Those are things that are needed for a large part of the time that I went after I first came to Fairbanks. We lived on Badger Road, which was 10 miles away from the center of Fairbanks, the only government in the community at that time. The largest government in the community at that time was the city of Fairbanks. Everybody who lived outside of the city was still governed by the city council, but had really, I mean in a real sense, but had absolutely no voice in that. And I think that the growth of the borough has a lot of really good things in it. That doesn't mean as citizens we can sit home and watch TV and not be involved in our community. The only thing that saves us, if anything can, from the evils of bureaucracy is to have a really informed, involved, vigilant citizenry monitoring everything. And I think that's where we fail, that we don't have that energy going into the government. But I don't fault the growth of the borough because I think it has improved lives here.
I won't argue with that rationale either. I have
well, I think it needs to be pointed out that what is government? We, the people, were government. Hmm. And actually, the people or the power to be didn't necessarily go looking for these powers. It was a result of the people mm-hmm. requesting it and wanting it. And then they have to come back and serve their need. So, but, you know, it quote unquote, government is bad. I mean, and we all get that image so oftentimes when actually we look at ourselves, we are government.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's many, many times, however, that government tends to jump in where it really should hold back a bit. I'm always reminded of two things. One, a cartoon. There used to be a James Hatlow used to draw cartoons. Did a two-frame thing before and after. The first frame of this one cartoon says there's a gentleman, businessman, he's going to leave New York City and he's going to move to the country where things are freer and no restrictions and such like that. The next frame of the cartoon shows this very same person up before the assembly or the council saying, we need. And the second, it was an instance that happened to me when I was working for the city engineer's office. Back in 60, I guess. We had a little bit of a spring runoff at that problem at that time, and I was filling in for the director of public works at that point. And a guy called up, and water was flooding, coming into his basement. And so I dispatched a crew out to give him a hand. The crew came back, and they were just really furious. There was a pile of water was running into his basement, small trickle. There was a pile of dirt that was thawed right nearby, and a shovel. And this man did not see fit to go out and dam his own and protect his own basement. Sometimes, I think we sometimes expect too much of government. We want them to do everything.
Good example, Harold. I mean, it's true today as it was then.
Sure. And on both sides. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
People expect someone to do it for them.
Yeah, we're all lazy.
I'm not.
Pardon me. I am.
June Carlson, would you talk to us about some of the events that are coming up this year. Everything starts February 11th.
Yeah, I'd be happy
right?
to. And before we get too far, I want to thank you for inviting us out so that we can bring
pleasure.
This to the public. Some of the things that we're doing, and if you look at your mail, if you get mail that's been postmarked in Fairbanks, 50% of our outgoing mail is carrying our 25th anniversary cancellation stamp. We couldn't afford to buy four hubs. We only could afford to buy two. Then the first probably big thing that's coming off will be Saturday, February 11th. Noel Wien Library is putting on a winter children's fair. And they're going to have something like 23 activity booths set up. There's going to be activity in the auditorium, like on safety bear, different things like that. Susan Somerville is bringing her children's choir down, and they're going to sing some songs for us. And they will be introducing a song that's been specifically written for the 25th anniversary.
Nice.
And it's catchy, it's cute. In fact, Jan Halverson with the Visitors Bureau is so caught up in it that they're going to have Earl Hughes back them up, and they're going to make a tape of it. So this will be introduced at that time. The schools are doing a history. Now, I don't know if all schools, they're working on it, but various schools are going to write their own history on their school. And then we're compiling this into a hardbound book, and this will be given to the library for reference when it's done. The retired teachers are looking at, and they're going to get some trivia questions on what kind of a basis. I'm not sure if it'll be once a month or once a week, but they'll be in the newspaper, and the answer will be the next week. So just to kind of create a little interest. And in the fall, we're looking at possibly October, we're going to have some type of recognition for all the elected officials since its beginning. And we'll probably have ribbons and mm-hmm. whoever's been here 25 years, of course, most of them have been here probably many more years than that, at least some of the originators. The grand finale, we're hoping to have New Year's Eve, and that's still in the planning, depending upon they had hoped to have had it done at the new community center, but if that's supposed to be finished in February 1990, but if it isn't finished, they'll probably have it at the Big Dipper or some other place. And then there'll be other activities throughout the year that we'll be plugging into our theme. Our theme is the Silver Spirit of the Golden Heart. And we're working on the thing that I'm more or less interested in was getting it into the schools. And we've also let the schools know, we've volunteered some of these originators, that they will come and be a speaking pool if they need it for some of their social studies. I know I mentioned it to Harold, and I mentioned it to Mike, and that. And so the schools may, as they get going into the year, request some of the speakers. Then we're trying to be able to keep or sort out the important documents, the documents of historical value, artifacts. And what we're looking for is a repository for this type of thing. And this will take funding. This is the one that will really take some funding. Because it's going to have to be ongoing. And the way it looks right now, I think the University of Alaska Library will be the repository because they are tied in. And if you go to the Noel Wien Library, you can request it and you can still be available to you. And both librarians have told us that they've had inquiries about things, but there's no way of retrieving it at this point. And this is what we're hoping to establish. And so we have a group that's looking at writing grants or researching if there's a grant available for this type of thing, because it's also got to be ongoing so that as the years go on, that the historical documents will be preserved and be able to be retrieved. And they felt that if we didn't do that now, it could be lost. I mean, it would never be initiated. They felt this would be a good time to initiate that type of thing. So basically, these are some of the things that we are planning for and are in the process. And then we have some items. Our budget was zero, of course, and we had a few things we had to pay for, which is very little. We had our first January 1 stamp collector's official stamp. So we had to pay for those cachets and then the dye hubs and that. So as to pay for that, we had some mugs made. They're for sale. And we have a cloisonné pin that's for sale. We have a button that's for sale. and we're going to have some shirts and caps, and they will be available at the fair, children's fair at Alaskaland. And they're also in the stores. Of course, the ones in the stores, we're not getting revenue. It's just some of us on the committee that are selling that we will get revenue to pay for our expenses, which are nominal. But basically, the response has been very good. We've had a lot of people. We've had probably collectively 20, 25 people coming out to some of our planning meetings. So it's been very well received.
Thank you, June. So first event people should take note will be February 11th, and after that, watch the News
and
Miner, listen to the radio.
Noon to 4 p.m. on the Saturday of February 11th.
Noon to 4. Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, a difficult question for the last 7 minutes, but I'm going to ask it anyway. Would you look ahead collectively 25 years and see what you see? Where do you think Fairbanks North Star Borough will go? Larger, smaller, more troubled, more efficient, more streamlined? Anybody?
Can you go full circle and come back, because you didn't give me much time to think about this.
I'm going to go away from Mike Dalton. Oh, yes?
I would suggest that within the next 2 or 3 years that you'll find some more conservative people on the Borough Assembly. As an outgrowth of current financial pinches and more efficient operation of the borough, I think that Fairbanks will continue to grow. I think the university is a big element in that situation. University is will be a distinguished center of education and research, and it continues to grow. And I happened to live on the hill back there, first hill north of the campus, and I look down on the campus and I see new additions every year or so. Mm-hmm. And I'm not a watchdog of the university, but I know that it's an important element in our total economy here. And I think that eventually we will have a greater university. I think the sports program here has tremendous growth possibilities, like in skiing and hockey. And there again, I'm talking about the university, but the whole borough. The economics of the state, I think, are stabilizing, and there are millions of people in the United States of America who would love to come to Alaska, perhaps to live, to visit. Some of those who come to visit stay. There are other things I could talk about, but I haven't given this much thought, so go ahead, someone else, please.
June Carlson.
Well, as time goes on, I think that our tourist season will stretch into the winter months. I was quite surprised, the figure was given to me the other day, how many Japanese are visiting here in the wintertime skiing, and I was quite surprised. And I don't recall the number, but so I'm not going to quote it, but it was amazing to me. Now, it hasn't happened the first 25 years, but I think probably in the next 25 years we may see unification, because I think it's inevitable, and it's worked quite well in other areas, but it's going to take a lot of education and a lot of selling, but I think it will come.
Interesting thing on unification. We keep voting it down, but we keep talking about it. Doesn't go away.
They'd have to
question.
Draw, you know, a good draft that would be acceptable to the public.
Janet Baird, 25 years ahead?
As far as the borough is concerned, I think the borough will grow. I think that there are some very serious economic and very serious social problems in this community. We're part of the world, and those issues are there. I see two particular areas, and the word environment comes to my mind in both of them, and one is the natural environment. You know, it's 56 below at my house this morning, and it hasn't been that cold in Fairbanks for a long time, and it's just a joy to have that weather back again. I'd be glad if it went away tomorrow, but it's real neat to just have that contact with the physical environment here. Mm-hmm. And I think we have to be real careful about preserving that specialness of Alaska and the environment. And I think the borough, with its planning and zoning powers and its air quality powers and economic development issues and those kinds of things, very important that the thought of the specialness of Alaska and of the interior of Alaska be kept in everybody's mind, so that we don't, in the name of progress or growth or something, ruin the things that brought us all and kept us all here. And the other thing about environment is human environment. Just even from the standpoint of the school system, we have a good school system, but there are things that it needs that it has. There are needs that young people have. There are needs in terms of economic development in this area. There are needs in terms of health. There are needs in terms of human relations. I've lived in Fairbanks a long time, and when we first came, I was struck by the lack of prejudice, the lack of discrimination. My opinion is that racism is much more rampant in Fairbanks in 1980 than it was in 1950 when we came. We have problems, and I think that we should all see to it that the borough, which as a government, in my view, will inevitably grow, and other structures and institutions that we have in this community really get down and look at problems and meet those problems. And I think we can create a much better community for ourselves.
Thank you. Harold Gillen, we've got just about a minute left. Your thoughts about living in the Arctic might fit well here, if it's all right.
Okay. Well, I hope that we in Alaska that currently live here begin to develop the attitude that this is our home, that we are going to live here, that we don't try to fight the elements because we can't, that we begin to accept the 56 below weather, that we live in it. Mike mentioned the sports and such like that. The more we can get out, the more we can do, the better we are. I hope that this area continues to grow. I think that one of the things that will aid in the growth and development is finally when we as a state and as a borough recognize that we can't continually put more and more rules and regulations on people without grinding them down to stopping actually progress. Progress to me is a very special thing. I think that we have to grow. A lot of us would like to go back in time and how it used to be. I don't want to go back. I want to go forward. The pipeline, I think, was the greatest thing that ever happened to Alaska. As I've mentioned to you and I've mentioned to others, before the pipeline started, the biggest export, the biggest thing of value that we had was our children, because we weren't developing enough jobs to allow them to work. So they had to leave and go elsewhere. Now, because of the pipeline and the oil companies, I am very selfish in this way, because now I'm able to enjoy my grandchildren, because my kids were able to go to work here and stay.
Thanks, Harold Gillen. Janet Baird, June Carlson, Mike Dalton, thank you all for joining me on Sunday at Noon. I'm Susan McGinnis, your host. Next week, yes, I thought I was wrong for a minute. Next week, joint English professors Frank Seuss and Peggy Shoemaker and me with an interview with Gretel Ehrlich, poetry, author of poetry and of fiction of Heart Mountain, her most recent novel. You're listening to Sunday at Noon. That's thanks to John Christabite for engineering today and my executive director, Carla Tonella.